You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
And I've got to tell you, like, I've really enjoyed having you on all these different shows and stuff.
Oh, thanks. It's fun. Wow. This is the part of the show where we just, like, suck each other's
well,
dicks.
Well, I'm glad that you're here. What I wanted to do, Joel, is ask you a question.
Uh-oh.
How do you think you've been doing?
Oh, God. This is like that year anniversary for the 3 months.
You ever get that when you're at work?
Job?
And, like, the boss brings you in and goes, how do you think you've been doing around here?
How do you think you've been
doing? It's never going to end well. No, we're not going to have a talk
There's
like
no
that,
right answer.
Because I'm just as guilty now. As you have been, of suggesting bad movies with this piece of garbage. It is the Editing Bay on the Next Wave Radio Network. We are your editing baiters. My name's Joe.
I'm Joel.
And we've decided to kind of jump over a decent film right to its sequel, or not really a sequel. It's just a follow-up movie, the Tales from the Crypt movie, Bordello of Blood.
That's right. And you say it's not a sequel, but actually, I was doing some reading up on it. This was intended to be the second of a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
So in its way, it was supposed to be its own Empire.
Was it supposed to be the second? I thought I read that Demon Knight was supposed to be the second chapter of a planned trilogy of movies. And then there was like a movie called, it was supposed to be called like Dead Easy, a movie that was supposed to take place in New Orleans. And they never made that one. But then they went on with Bordello of Blood.
Oh, interesting. So they just jumped right over. So they thought this was going to be the stronger between.
I don't know what they thought. I don't think they expected Demon Knight to do as well as it did in the box office.
I like that movie.
I do too. And it got horrible critical response.
That's too bad. No, that's unwarranted.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit, when you suggested Bordello of Blood, I think I may have been thinking of that.
You thought Demon Knight?
Because I was like, oh man, I remember digging that movie.
Yeah,
you know, they're trying to keep the demons out of the house.
Demon Knight's fantastic. It's kind of like a cross between like Assault on Precinct 13 and like The Alamo and Night of the Living Dead. Really awesome, very atmospheric, very claustrophobic.
Yes.
With a very cool sci-fi fantasy element to it too.
And
we don't get that in Bordello of Blood.
No, unfortunately not.
In fact, the word atmosphere was nowhere near this production.
Comedy. It had a comedic atmosphere to it, or tried to anyway.
It was really forced. I mean, if I could give this, if sum it up in one word, I would say forced.
Yeah. You're right.
I don't even, and forced and forgettable, the two Fs.
I've already forgotten it.
I've watched the movie twice. Because I told you yesterday, I was like, I watched it. I'm going to have to watch it again because I forgot a whole bunch of it already.
Yeah.
I watched it today. I still don't remember half the stuff that I meant to retain. I don't remember what Dennis Miller's character's name was.
Gutman. There's supposed to be some sort of play on it where they keep mispronouncing it. But
okay.
Isn't it Gutman?
I don't remember.
It's been less
this
than 24
stuff that,
hours.
Like, I should have this up on a phone or on a computer.
This movie is not worthy of that.
I don't remember. All I do know is that we open up with this like weird Indiana Jones-esque kind of opening.
It was very much so, to the point where the guy they cast in kind of like the Alfred Molina esque role, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The side character to Indy Jones. He looked like him.
Uh-huh.
He was doing this fake accent that I think was trying to emote.
Oh my God, the accents were horrible.
Alfred Molina. You know what though? The little midget, not bad. It's pretty good.
the midget.
The midget was.
You know the actor's
actor.
Name?
No.
No, we're just going to call him the
midget.
I
only commit full size people's names to memory. Actors.
We couldn't. If he's a midget, we couldn't at least just remember his first name or last name, just half of it.
You talking about the character or the actor?
I don't even remember
either.
The character's
I
name.
Either.
I do remember though that he was. You know, he leads these guys to this temple.
Yeah.
It almost reminded me of from Dusk Till Dawn.
You know what? And I'm glad you mentioned that because this whole movie kind of feels like it either inspired from Dusk Till Dawn, like Robert Rodriguez saw it and was like, well, shit, I can do that.
Yeah.
Which came out first, though?
Oh, no. Bordello of Blood came out first.
Okay, yeah. So it came out in 1996, Bordello of Blood.
Yeah.
And then when did we get Dusk Till Dawn? 98?
Dusk Till Dawn was 98, yeah.
Not long after.
I'll tell you. I think...
If only one of us had
96
connection.
Or 96 or 97, I wouldn't be too surprised if we were close there.
I'm going to look it up and I'll
tell
you.
Well, while you're looking it up, I'm going to summarize what we see in the first little bit of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the midget and his crew, they dig up, and there's like this horrible digging montage where he's like, go ahead and dig. And these guys dig, and they end up down in this cave. No one's covered in dirt. No one's covered in any sand. They're still wearing their clean costumes, and they end up in like this tomb or a temple or whatever. And he's like, there it is. There's the treasure. He's like, that's not a treasure. That's a casket.
Mm-hmm.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, that is the treasure. So they destroy the bands that are holding it closed. They open the coffin. Dead body in there.
Right.
Well, this is just a dead body. You know who this is? This isn't just any dead body. This is Lilith. And it's like, what? And he talks, he tells the legend of Lilith, how she's like the mother of all vampires.
What did she say? The most evil woman ever to have walked the earth?
Exactly.
And of course, her name is Lilith. Like, you can't come up with a better name for the most evil woman who's ever walked the earth.
Right? I mean, well, I guess if it works for that that game Night Stalkers,
that's true.
It works for this movie.
I'm guessing, though, that the screenwriter, that was probably his ex-wife's name.
I think you give this movie too much credit that it has a screenwriter. So he ends up revealing that he has this box with like a heart in it, separated into four different parts.
Yeah.
And when he takes these little dividers out, the heart will regenerate itself. And he puts the heart back into the body of this corpse, and he's trying to resurrect it, It won't come back to life. And so these guys threaten to kill the midget. And that's when the corpse comes to life and starts to, you know, wreak havoc and drink the blood of all these people.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't kill the midget because the midget has the key from Demon Knight.
Yes.
Now, in Demon Knight, the key possessed the blood of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they used that. They would put it in doorways, and it would, you know, create little barriers and
awesome.
Stuff. They didn't do that at all in this movie. It was just apparently used to control the vampires.
And then they just abandoned it, like, halfway through.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. But, like, they throw it, and it breaks, and that's the last we see of it, which doesn't really support the this was supposed to be a trilogy, because that was supposed to be a through line, I thought, between all three of these movies. So maybe halfway through the making of this movie, they know there would be no Tales from the Crypt Part 3.
But there ended up being a Tales from the Crypt Part 3.
Yeah?
Yeah, starring like Jennifer Grey, called Ritual. It went straight.
Oh, okay.
It was released overseas in 2002.
Oh, there you go.
It didn't see an American DVD release until 2006.
Oh, no. Just, just for those collectors.
Can you imagine that? That kind of discrepancy time-wise that you open up overseas, what, 4 years before releasing it in the U.S. in any kind of medium, and it doesn't possess the key at all. It doesn't follow any kind of through line.
Yeah.
I think it's just a Tales from the Crypt movie in name only. I don't even know if, like, the Crypt Keeper makes an appearance or anything.
Well, that's bullshit. You can't have a Tales from the Crypt movie without the Crypt Keeper.
I agree.
Which, by the way, we glossed right over. You say it opened up on that scene, but it actually...
Oh, yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
As all Tales... Did you watch Tales from the Crypt when,
I did,
when it was on HBO?
Yeah, and I loved it. And all the stories in Tales from the Crypt were based on one of the stories that were featured in the EC Comics graphic novels.
Yeah.
And Demon Knight was the first of the Tales from the Crypt stories that didn't derive from one of the comic book stories. It was, you know, like we said, it was originally written. In fact, that movie was written back in the late 80s. And
oh,
it was
really?
Supposed to be a completely different movie altogether. And then, like, it went through a few rewrites, and then the Tales from the Crypt people kind of acquired it and made it one of their stories.
Interesting.
But, yeah, so yeah, no, this, you're right. This movie opens up with Crypt Keeper in a bar with William Sadler, who plays the Demon Knight.
I thought that's who that was.
Yes.
I saw him.
He plays a mummy.
Uh-huh.
And he's just talking shit, talking about the business, being an actor and stuff. and he's, like, annoying the Crypt Keeper. Now, that's where this one is completely different from the first. Well, it's not completely different. When the first Tales from Crypt movie, Demon Knight, opens up, you see the Crypt Keeper, and he's directing some horrible film. And he starts cursing, and we actually get to see some bad CG effects as the Crypt Keeper's, like, walking around. We see him full body with that Crypt Keeper face, like, superimposed on
it. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And so when it opens up, in fact, I'm sitting in the theater, I'm going, oh, my God, this is going to suck. This is going to be so fucking horrible. Lo and behold, I ended up really loving it.
Yeah.
But this one was just a little bit cheekier than the first one, where, you know, Crypt Keeper's just kind of talking to himself, and he's narrating, this guy's a bag of bones.
Yeah, the writing is pretty weak.
Yeah, it's incredibly weak, and it didn't translate into the actual feature very well at all.
No. But I guess the first one didn't either, as you're saying. You know, they're two completely different tones.
But what I'm trying to say is that at least with the Crypt Keeper vignettes being kind of weak, at least the movie in Demon Knight was strong.
Oh, and here you just had
in
shit
here, it
on
was like
shit crime.
It was a shit sandwich. and yeah, there was like nothing too terribly redeeming within the course of the main story.
No, I think you're right. We'll get more into that in a second, but before we get off of this, I have the year. Would you believe it? 1996. Same year. And same. Not only that, From Dusk Till Dawn came out in January of 96. This wasn't released until August, I think.
Wow.
Late summer.
Okay.
So, yeah, it beat it to the theater.
Jesus. And it beat it in the box office, I'm sure.
It beat it in every way, like just creatively. Creatively?
Creatively.
Creatively.
We don't need to speak.
Wrong.
We don't speak good.
Emphasis on the role.
So I wanted to bring something up.
Do it.
And this has nothing to do with Bordello of Blood.
Great.
But we're talking about From Dusk Till Dawn. We're talking about Robert Rodriguez.
Oh,
that was like, you know, one of the movies that really, I mean, I know El Mariachi put him on the map, but, you know, I think only a few people saw that movie. Then you had something like Desperado.
Yeah, and most people didn't even know about El Mariachi until Desperado came on. They were like, oh, this was a sequel to a movie.
Right.
And then that's where, at least in my little circle, El Mariachi really started flying off the shelves at the local rental place.
Exactly. And then people were like, wow, this is kind of the same movie.
Yeah, it really
it's
is.
The same story.
It's like the Evil Dead versus
exactly.
The
Evil Dead 2 and and you know, Desperado, a pretty good rehash of the same story.
Yeah.
And then you got a third film out of that with Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
But not bad.
The one that with my friends that really put Robert Rodriguez on the map was From Dusk Till Dawn.
Absolutely.
You know, everybody liked the zombie vampire movies. We loved that kind of shit. And we went to the theater, we piled into the theater probably two or three times to see that one. What happened to Robert Rodriguez? We were talking about this off the mic.
Yeah.
Because I, just before we got here, had seen Mariachi Kills. Or not Mariachi.
Machete.
Machete. Now I've got Mariachi. Although
he's probably working on that right
now. I know,
now.
Right? Machete Kills. And it wasn't very good. And I remember asking you this question on the elevator up here. What happened to the Robert Rodriguez that made Sin City?
I know, man. Looking back at his career, you start to wonder whether he was one of these auteurs who was super talented and maybe he just had a couple of good films in him and then that's all he had. And now he's just kind of like running on steam. Or if he was ever really good at all.
I think he was good. I think he was. He told a decent story. I mean, hell, we got, what did we get? We got Sin City.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I know he had that little time where he was making the Spy Kids movies and the Sharko and Lava Boy or whatever.
I like that for he Spy was, Kids movie.
Spy Kids was good. And what he was doing was he was playing with technology at that time too.
Mm-hmm.
For a filmmaker like him who, you know, didn't always have huge studio backing, he did what he could with the with what he had and he did an impressive job. But then, you know, he got his hands on Sin City, which was amazing. What, I mean, just, oh my God, what a great film.
Yeah.
And then he went and did the Grindhouse thing with Quentin Tarantino. And that's when we got Planet Terror, which I liked.
Yeah.
I liked that a lot. And I think a lot of people who saw that, who saw the double, especially if you saw the double feature, which I didn't, Jesus.
No, he's got 4.5 hours to take
out. It's a long time.
I didn't even know any theaters that were showing it around.
Oh, God,
me at the
time. Right down the street before they turned that into a Studio Movie Grill when it was a Lowe's.
Oh, yeah.
They showed both.
I wasn't up here then.
So we dedicated Ken from the Joe versus Ken podcast.
Yeah.
We dedicated an afternoon. We went and saw that. And I got to tell you, like, I thought Planet Terror way outdid Death Proof. I thought Death Proof was horrible.
It was really awful. And it was the second of the feature, too, right? So I really feel sorry for the people who stuck around the 4 hours because that last half of Tarantino's just drags.
Oh, yeah.
And anticlimactic. And ultimately, I mean, we could go on.
Ultimately, you build up for that weird car chase and stuff at the end. But
and then they just kick his ass.
You basically watch the same thing happen twice in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
A bunch of chicks talking around a table trying to do that Reservoir Dogs thing. And then they die. Or these chicks die. They get hit by a car.
Mm-hmm.
Then we do it again with like a whole new. All right, this is what. But Planet Terror, getting back to Planet Terror, really fun, really campy.
Yeah,
you know, he really went out there and captured that whole feeling of the Grindhouse pictures.
Yeah,
I think that like suddenly got stuck in his head because that's when we got like the trailer from Machete.
From Machete,
and from then we were fucked. Yeah. I feel like we were fucked. Like Robert Rodriguez was like, wow, this is what people want. They want, you know, these weird old Grindhouse movies. No, the novelty of it wore off. With the trailers, like I liked the trailer for Machete.
Oh yeah,
I think that worked. Stretching it out to like an hour and a half, it just didn't work quite as well. Now I will say that when compared to Machete Kills, Machete looks like The Godfather. Machete Kills is not. I mean, it's like he tried to make a Mexican James Bond meets Star Wars movie.
You know what's weird about that first Machete? Machete, how are we going to say
think,
it?
I think
sound like a gringo trying to.
I think it's culturally sensitive for us to say Machete.
Machete. Okay, so el primero Machete. Cuando. No.
And you're doing the Italian hands. That was good.
I do that for all of my accents. When that came out, so you got this trailer. So when they decided they wanted to make a movie from it, now he's beholden to this trailer. Everything that was, all the scenes that were shown in the trailer, he basically had to build a story around and fill in the holes.
Uh-huh.
So I think maybe it was a little more successful on that level. You already knew what you were going to get. You knew there was going to be a scene at some point where he's flying his motorcycle through the air with a machine gun off the top of it, and there's an explosion in the background.
Yeah.
It's mandated. It has to be in the movie. The second one, there's no precedence, right? It was all, I haven't seen it, so
no,
it's all original.
It's, well, for the most part.
Okay.
You know, it opens up with the whole, like, here's a sneak preview of what's to come, and it's like, Machete kills again in space.
The third one,
and it's
one,
this
yeah.
whole, like, yeah, and honestly, I mean, spoiler alert,
mm-hmm.
You have to be an idiot not to see this coming within the first 10 minutes of watching the actual movie, but, like, the whole movie basically is just setting up what we see in that trailer for the third movie.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So
he spoiled his own movie.
He spoiled his own movie before you watch it. I mean, take it for what it is. It's, again, it's Machete, so...
But what happens if this movie bombs now?
And it then has bombed.
They can't get the funding.
Opening weekend, it didn't even make $4 million.
Oh, really? But how wide did it open, though?
I don't know.
See, it may have been one of those limited releases, although... Of the 20 screens that theaters have, probably one of them is devoted to this movie. If people wanted to see it, they'd be seeing it.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
it's setting itself up then as the kind of what Tales from the Crypt did. They said they were going
to
make this trilogy.
Way to bring it
Only
back
got
around.
Two in. Boom. That's
Good
2 weeks in a row,
job,
motherfucker.
Man, because I was sitting here going, all right, so we're not here to talk about Robert Rodriguez. So Bordello of Blood,
mm-hmm.
Fans. Not digging it quite as much as they dug Demon Knight.
No.
Critics panning this one even harder. And do you think it falls on the shoulders of trying to make Dennis Miller a leading man?
I mean, I think that's the problem, too. Apparently, he wasn't the coolest guy to work with on set, doing a little research. And like he was rude to everybody. He was arrogant. I mean, he's Dennis Miller. Now, I like Dennis Miller.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you listen to his radio show. You know, ever since 9/11, he's kind of gone super conservative. So... Yeah, agree with him or disagree with him. The guy's funny, and he's got a hell of a vocabulary. That when I was first exposed to him, probably doing one of those HBO shows back in the day,
mm-hmm.
You'd have to sit there with a fucking dictionary to watch his stand-up because you know, you're missing all of the references and the words.
But how is that fun?
I mean, ultimately, I don't know that it is. I think it's for people who think they're smart
yeah.
to tell themselves that they're smart. Look
remember,
how superior
remember
we are.
When they had Dennis Miller like calling Monday Night Football games?
Yeah, and I liked it, too, because he would throw in, you know, references to Tchaikovsky or something in there.
Yes.
Like, you don't hear that on Monday Night Football for a reason, because
nobody
cares about Tchaikovsky.
He stormed the end zone like the Berlin Wall getting crashed down by Israeli Prime Minister Fareed Sharbouk. Like, you just throw stuff like that out there,
yeah.
and you're, like, as a football fan, you're like... The fuck is he talking about?
Non-sequiturs, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you got to be a fan of his style of comedy. And I guess I am, but you used the word forced earlier.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it seemed like the script writers were like, okay, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then Dennis Miller vamps.
Yeah.
Says something funny.
Uh-huh.
We'll let him figure it out later.
Exactly.
So he was kind of forced to come up with these one-liners that really don't play.
I don't even know where to begin with him.
Okay.
You know, like... With a movie like this, you've got like this, okay, I see what you were doing. You're trying to go for like a crime noir kind of you know, you've got this private investigator story mixed with a vampire tale. All right, okay. He wasn't charming.
No.
There was no chemistry between him and Erica Eleniak, who plays, I guess, our protagonist, our female protagonist
she's
in the film.
She's pretty unlikable.
She doesn't do anything.
No, she's a pretty face, and she isn't very sympathetic as all.
No, nobody is. No one is. Nobody in this film goes through any kind of a character arc.
I like Corey Feldman. I think he was probably the highlight for me.
Did you feel like maybe that was kind of the kiss of death for this movie?
What, Corey Feldman?
Corey Feldman, yeah. Playing the brother. Wasn't even playing like really a main role. He was just playing the brother.
I think he wanted to do it to be in the makeup. I think if anything, it was a death knell for his career. I don't know if he did anything after this.
Did you think he was like, dude, remember the Lost Boys? This is going to be just as big.
I think so. I don't know that he thought it was going to be big. I thought it was a paycheck to support his coke habit.
Yeah, well, there's
so,
that.
It was fun seeing him in the vampire makeup.
So
that's mouth.
He goes out with his buddies one night.
Yeah.
And Erica Laniak plays his sister.
Right.
And he's like, get off my back, bruh.
Yeah.
So they end up going to like this bar.
Right. Him and his buddies.
And some dude is like just spouting off about like, you want to get laid.
What? Talk about overacting.
Yeah. Yeah.
This guy, I guess it was supposed to be funny, but it was just awkward and uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
And I do enjoy the way he says, "God damn," though. You want to have the best goddamn lay of your life.
Oh my God.
And he does it twice in his monologue, uh-huh. And then he repeats his monologue verbatim later in the movie.
Yeah, to Dennis Miller.
So
he ends up telling these guys about this this brothel.
Yeah.
You can go to this place, you know, you get hooked up. And so they go. These dudes go. Well, not all of them. Just
Corey Feldman
and the guy he just shot in the crotch with a dart. Why he would continue to hang out with a dude like that, I have no idea.
Well, it's just setting him up. Yeah, it's one of those tropes of horror movies. You know who's going to get killed by... But everybody's going to get killed.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh. Just to jump ahead quickly. The minute I saw, the preacher... Like 2 milliseconds into, there's a preacher on this. I was like, oh, this motherfucker is going to die so bad. In a movie like this, there's no way that anybody religious.
Are you talking about the guy who played Humperdinck in The Princess Bride?
Okay.
I didn't know if you were talking about the guy who ran the mortuary.
Oh. Well, my God.
The guy at the mortuary, and he was running the funeral service that they go to later, so I didn't know if maybe you were talking about him.
The televangelist.
Yeah, the televangelist with the guitar.
Yeah.
He clearly isn't playing the guitar. Really, you're not going to hide that? You can't mask that with the camera a little bit?
Yep. Sorry, I took you away from Corey
Feldman. No, you didn't take me away from it at all. They end up going to the whorehouse, and that's when we find out that, Angie Everhart is the madam of this whorehouse that's filled with vampires. The only way to get into this thing, you go into the mortuary, they put you in the coffin.
You got to say the magic word, too. What's the password?
Oh, my God, I can't. I said, it's the most forgettable movie. I don't remember any of this stuff.
The Connery Wing or something.
The McCrichton Wedding or the McCrichton Service. Or,
yeah, something like that.
I can't remember what
it
is. But they end up having to get in this coffin. They send it through the crematorium, and it ends up opening up in the whorehouse.
Yeah.
And they come out, and it's chicks, boobs,
it's tits, first of all.
All over the place. That's all this movie is for about 10 seconds when they get into the brothel.
And that's how Tales from the Crypt was. I mean, one of the reasons it kind of gained popularity, being on HBO, it was probably one of the first original shows on HBO,
Dream On.
Okay,
You had Dream On, and then Tales from the Crypt came soon after.
But yeah, but back in the day, HBO was known strictly as movies.
Just movies.
You got it.
Yeah.
So
home
you
box
have to
office.
Wait for video, exactly.
Yeah.
And so they weren't really, this was before Sopranos or any of the shows. They weren't known for original programming.
Mm-hmm.
And even this probably came on, at midnight on Saturdays?
Oh, God, I think you're right.
Maybe
I think maybe Friday night at 10.
I don't think it was prime time at all.
Mm-mm, no, but it picked up. It had a huge following.
Absolutely. And then spawned a bunch of, spinoffs that did appear on broadcast cable. Did you ever watch Monsters? It was a show that would come on. It was I think it came on at midnight on Saturdays. It was just called Monsters, but it was the same premise. It was every, these little vignettes, and every week it was a different episode and a different kind of scary story.
Are you giving Tales from the Crypt credit for this?
Yeah.
You ever hear of Rod Sterling?
Okay, well, yeah, Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone.
But what is there?
Ray Bradbury Theater?
But there's a 30-year span between Twilight Zone and Tales from the Crypt. And I'm telling you, right on the heels of Tales from the Crypt, there was Monsters. And then the Outer Limits. They brought the Outer Limits
Outer
back.
Limits. There was also that Friday the 13th, the series.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay, yeah, but that was kind of little vignettes, too,
yeah,
wasn't
it? It was vignettes. I mean, it was all based around this antique store where everything was haunted
and
all this stuff got sold, and it was this chick inherited the store and ended up having to go and reclaim all of these haunted objects.
Yeah.
Not a bad premise. They shouldn't have called it Friday the 13th, the series.
Wow, that's brand recognition.
Right,
that's
exactly.
Marketers.
Everybody was waiting to find out, where's Jason, man? Where's Jason Voorhees? Yeah. Had they not called it that and just called it something else, just... Toys?
Monsters, maybe?
Monsters?
I swear it was just called Monsters. It was a good show.
Jesus.
Somebody out there knows what I'm talking about.
So there's a brothel.
Yes.
In this funeral home.
Boobs. Oh, that's what I was getting at. So with HBO, because it was original programming, they were, I'm pretty sure it was in the contract. There had to be at least a pair of tits in every episode.
Uh-huh.
At least probably twice, maybe.
Yeah.
And so that's how you know you're watching a Tales from the Crypt movie
when
15 minutes in, literally in your face, just a hard cut to boots.
Well, Demon Knight, we did get a little bit of gratuitous, the part where Thomas Hayden Church has, the car battery hooked up to his nipples.
Not the kind of boobs I'm talking about.
No, but there are other breasts in that scene.
Oh, yeah.
It's just that's
I forgot about that
part that I remember.
I forgot Thomas Hayden Church was in that.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
The Sandman. So, yeah, there are just boobs all over the place in
boobs,
this part.
Boobs galore. Boobs.
Corey Feldman and his buddy hook up with a couple of chicks, one of which that I recognize from some softcore porn that I saw on Showtime once. And
which one? The Indian looking
yeah,
chick?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I mean, who?
She was in this one called The Other Woman.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I was busy watching Lady Chatterley. Remember Lady Chatterley?
Oh, my God.
That may have been Skinamax.
Emmanuel in Space.
And Emmanuel. I sure hope my mom's not listening to this
episode. Of course she is. Of course she is. So she's going to go through some like old VHS tapes at the house. And like.
Oh, this was scrambled. This was me like.
Oh,
trying
really?
To watch, you know, a stretched boob go across the screen in like semi-black and white. It was a hard time.
The stuff
you
that
kids
you
with
to
your
watch.
Internet. You don't know what you have.
All right. So they're in this brothel and they hook up with a couple of chicks. I can't believe we haven't
times.
Even gotten to like the introduction of Dennis Miller yet.
It's more fun to talk about the other shit. This movie's awful anyway.
It really is bad. Yeah. All right. So long story short, they're in this brothel. They hook up with a couple of chicks and they end up getting killed. We see this dude's like heart get ripped out of his chest through by Angie Everhart's tongue going down his throat and ripping his heart. It's disgusting. And so then they take out Corey Feldman too. And, you know, fast forward, Erica Laniak's at the police department. She's like, I haven't heard from my brother for a few days. Mm-hmm. What the hell's going on? And Dennis Miller's hanging out in the waiting room. And he's like, what's that I hear? You can't find your brother? Well, baby, I'm on the case. I'll tell you what, it's $150 a day, but because I like you. I got a half-off special going on for sisters missing their brothers.
It's pretty good.
I'm like, Jesus, man. Just turn it off.
Smarmy motherfucker.
Yeah. Very smarmy. He apparently, his office is an old movie theater.
Yep, right down the street from the police station.
I mean, just it's so ridiculous. Yeah. This guy looks like he can't get a case to save his life, but he can pay the rent and power on a movie theater.
That's right.
That's fine.
Turns out he's a pretty good PI as well.
He's not bad, I guess.
I don't know why his career hasn't taken off.
Is it that he's a good PI or that the police in the city are completely fucking dumb?
Could be. Could be a little both.
So she reluctantly hires him to go ahead and look for her brother. And he does. He gets on the trail pretty quick, goes to the bar, meets up with the dude's friends.
You want to have the best? Yeah.
Well, no, this is before that. But this is before that. He meets up with the guy's friends, the guy who I thought at first was David Krumholtz, but it wasn't David Krumholtz.
Oh, yeah.
And so the guys are playing pool.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just sitting there going, I don't think you want to make that shot, buddy.
Yeah, fucking goading him.
Right. And it's just so, and the dude's like, you want to step outside? He's like, I don't have time to give you a blowjob right now.
No.
Like, seriously, you can't have a guy like this in your movie unless you can prove that he can also whoop a little ass if it's needed.
He's like twice the guy's age. He's in less shape.
Yeah.
What makes you think he's not going to get his ass kicked?
But the thing is, he doesn't. He doesn't whoop any ass.
Because he's Dennis Miller.
He's Dennis Miller, and he just wisecracks throughout the whole film. I don't really know where else to go with this. I don't – because, I mean, we would have to go through the entire story of this movie, and I kind of lose track of what the fuck is going on at one point.
It's,
like, I don't get – so we find out that, like, the midget is still around. He's got the key, and he's working for the Reverend, the televangelist Reverend, who's somehow connected with Lilith being back. But I don't get why. Did you catch like what was going on in the story?
I was trying to figure it out. The midget's working for the televangelist.
And the
only thing they allude to is that, you know, he's trying to do the Lord's work and kill as many sinners as possible. So
by making them vampires?
Lilith is, well, they lure the sinners.
But she's making them vampires.
Yeah.
Like Corey Feldman. She didn't kill Corey
Turns
Feldman.
Vampire,
she made him vampires.
Yeah, so they're really not dead, are they? In fact, they're quite undead.
They're undead for the most part. I mean, there are some people are getting their heads ripped off and, you know, like they're doubling the bodies and the caskets and stuff.
I like that.
Which I thought was clever. It was also, that was a device that was used in the movie Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever see that movie?
No, I haven't.
It's fantastic.
Is it?
It's really great.
Oh,
a lot of people are like, man, I'll never watch that movie. The title sounds stupid. It's really a good flick. Of the Tarantino wannabes that were made back in that time,
oh yeah,
Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead was fucking phenomenal.
Huh. All right, I'll check it out. We'll do that next week, maybe.
It's not a bad movie, though.
I thought we weren't doing that anymore.
Oh, that's right. God damn it.
God
damn. So Dennis Miller, he hooks up. He goes to this other bar, finds out from this guy, like, you want to have the best pussy you've ever had.
It's really just like over the top and gratuitous.
Yeah.
And the guy is like spitting. First of all, there's a lot of like disgusting
eating like
and
raw
and
red meat.
Foley noises. Like the Foley artist on this movie just like went over the top with a cantaloupe.
Yeah.
I can picture him in the sound booth just getting his hands all dirty.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I appreciate that in this type of movie, this kind of gory movie.
Mm-hmm.
But when that's all you have, when you have that in Dennis Miller, like that's not enough to get
you have
$8.
You have what you have in this movie is you have a bunch of crappy actors. Yeah. Like, no one that can act their way out of a box. Like, usually in something like this, you have at least somebody who does a decent job. Even the guy that plays Humperdinck is kind of crappy in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have four locations. All studio locations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Four locations, and you've got no development. There's no development going on. No characters. There's no journey. None of these characters go on any kind of journey of any kind.
Yeah.
I just said kind twice. And it's just empty fucking dialogue from a really sarcastic character that you just grow to like less and less as the movie goes on.
Yeah, yeah. Until that ending. Well, we'll get to that ending in a second.
You know, yeah.
But the sister, you're right. Like, if there's ever going to be a semi-protagonist in this movie, you know, if you don't like Dennis Miller, fine. At least go for the hot chick.
Uh-huh.
She's so just plain vanilla. She's
yeah.
B. And you don't even really sympathize with her. Like, she's trying to find her brother.
Yeah.
One would assume, although they hate each other from the get-go. She's really reluctant to put forth the effort to find, you know, she has to outsource the finding of her own brother.
Thank you.
In a better movie, this would be the sister on the trail of the brother trying to find out what happens.
Instead of trying to, like, find her brother or bring people to justice, she decides she's going to make a documentary. Yeah, like halfway through the movie, she decides she wants to make a documentary, and the first place she goes to is a strip club where, like, the televangelist and the vampire queen happen to be hanging out.
Yeah, yeah. That was just not a deus ex machina.
No, it was deus ex machina when he comes in. He's like, I got these pictures.
That's right.
It's so weird. You got to believe me. There's somebody else in that casket, and they don't photograph. Like, for really a dead vampire, like you wouldn't even see a dead, like. I thought vampires turned to dust when they died anyway.
Yeah. That's true.
Whatever.
Yeah.
We're breaking all the rules in this movie. But then just so she could see those pictures, and he's like, no, I swear there was someone else there. And so like 10 seconds later, she could be like, no, this video, they're not showing up on video. I wasn't talking to myself. He was right. That's sloppy.
Yeah,
it's lazy and sloppy script writing.
There's no good motivation. The motivation she should have is overlooked. And I like how even, when did she finally discover her brother? She seems very unconcerned that he's been turned into a vampire.
When he calls her up and he's like, you got to meet me, sis. I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
And that's when, and this is like after the decision to make the documentary. So it's not like she found out he was dead or turned into a vampire and then's like, I want to make a documentary about this. It was just that he was last seen at this whorehouse.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, she still doesn't know for sure.
No.
But she's like, I want to make a documentary now. Be the Lord Soldier. Go ahead. And so, yeah, she ends up getting called by Corey Feldman, who's like, come meet me at this power plant. Meet me at a power plant. And that's when the second of two references. The first one was in the very beginning of the movie when Corey Feldman opens his door and we see the Demon Knight movie poster behind
him. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
And then they're in the power plant and there's like smoke and stuff. And Dennis Miller's like, wow, this is like something out of a Tales from the Crypt episode.
Yeah, it's like,
what?
You can't wink to the audience that heavily.
No.
That's one of my pet peeves is when, in a movie, when they say the name of the movie.
Yes.
Like, Tom Hanks, Wilson, looks like we've been cast away.
Well, I just saw a trailer before Machete today for this new Ice Cube movie with Kevin Hart.
Oh, no.
Where, like, Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart soon to be in the Golden Child remake.
Yes. Kevin Hart's supposed to be, like, dating Ice Cube's sister.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And wants to get his permission to marry her.
Yeah.
And so Ice
that
Cube's like,
kinda good.
You want to do that? You're going to have to come with me. On a ride along.
And that's the name of the movie?
That's the name of the movie.
Oh, come on, guys.
Yeah.
I will forgive it in Independence Day, though. It was earned.
Well, the movie's like somebody's name. Like Machete.
Captain Phillips.
Yeah, Captain Phillips.
Sure, they say
something
it quite
like
a few times there.
I mean, it would have been horrible if in the middle of, like, you know, A New Hope, Han Solo just looks at Chewie and he's like, man, I can't believe all these Star Wars.
I didn't even like it in Star Trek: First Contact. That's the most leeway I'll give it. Do you know what scene I'm talking about?
No, I have no idea.
This is you're not a Trekkie, are you?
Well, I'm not, but I think we proved in one of the 8-bit episodes that I know
you
way too
know
much
more
about
Star
Trek
than you think. This was the first Next Generation cast like exclusive movie.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
it didn't
yeah, yeah.
have Captain
No,
Kirk.
I remember that. It's the one that had what's his name from L.A. Confidential.
Cromwell.
Yeah. And he played like the dude who invented light speed or something.
Warp drive, please, Joe.
Sorry,
no, just kidding. You. But yeah, he has the he has that line. He's like, "You guys are just a bunch of like astronauts on some sort of Star Trek." But he sells it.
Yeah.
And it's a nice little ha-ha, hearty
I don't remember this at all.
Yeah. Well, it's trust me, there's a thousand. This is the sound of a million nerds screaming into the microphone.
All right. So that's the scene where they actually meet back up, where Erica Eleniak and Corey Feldman, they meet back up, and we find out Corey Feldman's a vampire, and he's trying to kill them.
And she could give a fuck.
She couldn't give two fucks. Yeah. And so they try to make their way out of this factory. And she decides to swing on a chain, like over like a 3-foot chasm.
Yeah.
And Dennis Miller's like, "This is crazy. Are you out of your fucking mind?" I'm like,
"Didn't look that hard.
You jump across that, exactly, man. Like, what is your deal?"
James Bond has done more, and he's not dealing with the supernatural.
So he crashes through a window and lands on a cop's car.
Uh huh.
The fuck is the cop doing there?
Yeah, they never explained it.
No.
Again, another Deus Ex Machina, because that's how she gets left behind, because she makes the jump, she lands. And then moments later, we're seeing her captured by the vampires.
Right. So he gets arrested. He's on a hospital bed. The cop is there, you know, tying him down. And that's when some vampire nurse shows up and kills the cop. Why? Like, I don't get why. There's so many things that, like, had they just left well enough alone, nothing would happen. It's not like the cops believe him.
Yeah.
He's already arrested. He's going to jail.
It's gonna happen.
Why the fuck are the vampires coming in? It's almost like an American Ninja. When we were talking about when
a
Joe,
far superior film,
when
by
Joe,
the way.
Yeah, I agree. When Joe gets arrested by the military police, and he's going to be put on trial.
That's right.
And they're accusing him of all the killings, and then they send ninjas to kill
in
him,
the jail,
but they kill everybody on their way to him.
I know, it's like, listen, guys, you won.
Yes.
You won already. He's in jail. They don't believe him. You get to buy your plutonium or whatever the fuck it is.
Right.
What it was. Why leave well enough
alone?
That's
exactly what happened in this movie.
That's
where
a good point.
He's about to get put in jail, and the vampires come, and they're like, ah, no.
You know, at this point in the movie, though, I was just like, I don't want to see another scene that doesn't have vampires in it.
So yeah.
I'm enough with the humans. Let's just get this 87 minutes over with and show me some vampires. This is a short movie, by the way. It's 87 minutes.
Yeah, it's really quick. It goes by really fast.
But no, it doesn't go by fast. I don't think it does.
But what I'm saying
in
is
time.
When they want to wrap up the movie.
Oh my God.
They just
yes.
decide we're going to just wrap everything up.
Oh my God. It's so. Oh, and the other thing too. This is another one of my pet peeves. This movie may have more of my personal pet peeves in it than. Ooh, say that five times fast. That's alliteration, folks. Personal pet peeves. Okay, so you mentioned the televangelist and they're practicing, and there's this big devil that they have on the set that he's going to kill, and they're doing a rehearsal.
Chekhov's gun. The Chekhov's gun moment of Bordello of Blood.
And yeah, it's exactly what it was. and so they've got this laser, and it's supposed to project, but it malfunctions, it burns too hot, and then it burns what? Across into like the wooden floor.
Uh-huh.
And this is like, we're not even in Act 2, are we? This is early on in the movie.
Oh, yeah. No, we're still very early into the film.
And you're watching that, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if that's going to play a role in the plot later on. Nope, probably not. I'm sure it has nothing to do with how the movie will resolve.
Does.
Man, just sloppy is a good word. Mm-hmm. This whole script is sloppy.
Yeah. So we get a really nifty Super Soaker commercial for about 5 minutes when like Dennis Miller drives his car through the fucking front door of this bordello.
How crazy is that?
Yeah, it's nuts. Kills Chris Sarandon.
Oh yeah,
the funeral home
too
guy.
Bad. I liked him. He was a highlight.
I gotta tell you, you know what we were talking like there were no good performers. I guess he was a good performer.
He's
in this
good,
one.
And that scene
where he's got the fat dead woman on the slab.
The most disturbing. Now, I don't remember anything else, but I will forever remember that scene. So he's got this cadaver, and he knows her, too, and he's like, oh, Mrs. Wilson, you're looking lovely this evening. And then he, like, she's naked. And by the way, when HBO was putting it in their contract that there has to be boobs in the movie, I don't think this is what they were talking about.
No.
They were talking about an overweight, dead corpse's boobs.
Sir. But this was one of the few moments in the movie that made me just laugh out loud.
I was laughing, and like, but crying on the inside a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So he's playing with her nipples. He's going, boop. And then he goes over to the other one, boop, and then he starts to like do like finger walk his way train. Down her body?
He was doing a train.
Oh, he was doing a choo-choo train.
Yeah, he was doing a choo-choo train.
Oh my God, I feel like I need to take a rape shower right now. Yes. Just retelling this story.
But then he cuts her open.
And then he slices her open. And then he tastes some of her blood. And he's like,
he doesn't taste. Does he taste her blood?
I think so.
I know he sniffed.
Oh,
he was like,
no, that's what it was. A lovely perfume.
Lovely perfume.
Oh, that's what it was. No, you're right. The Lilith tastes the blood.
Yeah, that's earlier. Right.
I'm getting confused.
Let's talk about Lilith for a second.
Okay.
Because I think for the most part, okay, you know, they end up doing their thing. There's the final showdown, and they kill the vampire queen played by Angie Everhart.
Angie Everhart. Now, what do we know her from?
Sports Illustrated.
Yep. Pretty much it.
That was it. And that's, again, I think that's one of the things that this movie suffered from was the fact that they didn't cast actors anywhere. Like, I wouldn't call Dennis Miller an actor. What has he done before Bordello of Blood?
He did.
Did he star in anything?
No, he co-starred in with Sandra Bullock in The Net.
That's right.
Do you remember that? But that may have even come after this, because did we even have the internet in 1996?
I think The Net came before.
All right, I'm going to Google that.
I think The Net was a 94 film.
You might be right. Yeah, that
sounds 94
right.
or 95. Yeah. I know.
You want to put some money on that, sir?
Yeah.
$20?
$20.
And I'm going to say it's 97. Let's see.
All right, here we go.
Net.
So while you're looking
there. Oh, 95.
Bam!
Fuck. I'm going to hit an ATM.
It's all good.
This episode.
It's all good. So Dennis Miller, I wouldn't say he's an actor.
No.
I wouldn't call him an actor.
He's a personality.
Erika Eleniak is not an actor.
No.
She was a Playboy model who went on to do like Baywatch. She was in Under Siege.
Where right.
Under Siege and the movie Chasers.
The Damsel in Distress.
Far better films for her career. She was also in E.T.
I saw that in her credits, but who did she play?
She was the little girl in the classroom when
Gertie?
Elliot went No, dude. When Elliot starts freeing all the frogs, and then he kisses the girl.
That's her.
That's
her.
Yeah, he kisses her. Yeah.
She turned out to be a looker.
She did turn out to be a looker.
I remember kind of having a crush on her.
Have you seen her since?
Uh-oh. Yeah. No, still good?
She was on a season of The Biggest Loser.
Uh-oh. Oh, you're kidding.
No, man.
Oh. She did look like she
she had capacity.
A bit of what my friends would call a Jiffy Pop, which...
Are you like John Bender from The Breakfast Club talking about any chick that has the name Claire has the propensity to blow up?
That's right. That's pretty much what it is.
She's
a Jiffy Pop.
She was smoking hot, man, when she did Under Siege and she pops up out of that cake and she's all like drugged up or whatever just to like get over the anxiety. So she starts like doing that dance and like Seagal's got that gun and he's like, put this on. I'm like, that's the worst decision ever. You should just have her running around this movie with nothing on the rest
of the film.
See
it all the time.
But she's looking fucking good. And then in the movie Chasers, she was like former military trying to go AWOL.
Is that Charlie Sheen?
No. It was Tom Berenger was in it, though.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
And so they end up, you know, he plays a military policeman who ends up chasing her with this other guy. And there's a scene when they catch her, and she ends up seducing this dude. And he, like, you know, takes her top off, and they get it on. Magnificent tits on this chick.
So then what's the problem?
I feel so bad saying this.
No.
The problem is they take her best asset.
Yeah.
And they don't show it in this film.
She's in a Hillary Clinton pantsuit throughout the entire
the
movie.
The whole movie, she's completely covered up.
And it's not like this is some sort of Oscar, like I'm going for the awards this year.
This
is a Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yes.
It's in the contract. Everyone else is showing their tits.
You've cast a Baywatch Playboy model.
I know.
And then you don't show any skin on her at all until like the very end you see some thigh action, just a little bit. And then you've got Angie Everhart.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, up to that point, she hadn't done nudity. She wasn't a nude. Since then, she has. But she hadn't done it then. But she was still like a really sexy swimsuit model. And you got her wearing some slinky dresses and stuff.
But I guess.
There was the scene where she's trying to live out Dennis Miller's fantasies.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She's a cheerleader and then Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, it was pretty weak.
It's kind of tame, you know?
I know.
Even
for
then,
a rated
even
R
for
movie.
96, it's like, what are you talking about?
A timely reference, by the way, to put a Marilyn Monroe.
Well, he did live in a movie theater.
That's a good point. Oh, I see what they're going for.
So you're taking the strongest attributes of these people.
Yeah.
And the only person you were trying to help cater to their strong suit was the person you shouldn't have.
Dennis Miller.
Dennis Miller. You're trying to let him make his references and be snarky.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. These chicks are really sexy chicks. And you've got one moment where, like, Angie Everhart's all, like, feeling up Erika Eleniak. And you're like, more of that.
Yeah.
More of that.
Too little, too late.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you don't even get to see.
You don't see anything.
The
You don't even get the, you don't get the payoff.
Well, you do at the end. I guess they couldn't have shown it then because it would have spoiled the surprise.
Surprise? Really? I mean, Jesus. It was just, again though, even that twist is so stupid.
It's stupid, but it's in line with all of the Tales from the Crypt. What Tales from the Crypt and, you know, Outer Limits were always kind of known for were setting up this premise, taking you through this story, and then making you think it's over. And then right before the credits,
there's
flip
the
it
twist.
On its head, and you're like, oh,
but,
shit!
But the difference is, with Bordello of Blood and everything else, but I haven't seen this movie, Ritual, but Bordello of Blood and everything else that I've seen that's Tales from the Crypt, they did it skillfully.
Yep.
That twist came skillfully. Even if you thought something was coming, you didn't know exactly what, or if you knew what it was finely done. It was well written, fairly solid for the story that they were telling. I think, and it was one of the worries that I had when I saw Demon Knight, was can Tales from the Crypt survive when you stretch it out feature length?
Mm-hmm.
And Demon Knight did well.
Yeah.
But Bordello of Blood probably would have been a lot better if it was a 30-minute episode and not an hour and a half long.
No. Do you think because it's 87 minutes running time that there's some stuff on the cutting room floor? Or
I don't know. I honestly feel like I get the feeling with this movie like they were struggling to just shoehorn whatever they could in to kind of to beef it up a little bit.
Yeah. But would we have been explained why the midget? First of all, why was he a midget anyway? One of our fans on Facebook brought that up earlier.
Yeah. I was gonna bring that up.
This midget. He doesn't need to be a midget. I'm wondering if he was like on retainer and they just needed to shoehorn him into some movie. But like, well, he could play this role.
Right. One of our Facebook friends, Michael Daly.
Yeah.
He made two comments. Bordello of Blood was one of the funniest horror movies ever. They use a laser to cut a cross in her chest.
Again.
Laugh out loud. God, I need to watch that one again. You don't, Michael.
Save yourself,
You don't
Michael,
need to watch
don't.
That one again. And then, wait. There was a midget in this movie, right? Why did they think they needed a midget?
Exactly.
And I'm thinking just because this guy probably had a relationship. If we go back, he probably had a relationship with the show. He'd probably done a few episodes.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm missing something. I was trying to think about Demon Knight. Was he in Demon Knight?
I don't remember there being a midget in Demon Knight.
I don't remember so either. All right. Well,
I can't remember. But it was just the casting decisions are so odd in this film.
Yeah.
And again, it probably would have worked better if it was just a 30-minute episode instead of an hour-and-a-half long story. At an hour and a half, you're really stretching it with these artificial set pieces, these action, and I'm using quotations right now, action set pieces where basically they're just escaping in a power plant or, it's Dennis Miller and Humperdinck from Princess Bride shooting hookers with super soakers.
And you know what? For him being, like I said, the minute I saw him pop on screen, I'm like, oh, anybody who's religious and this smarmy and then you find out he's kind of a dick when he's not televangelizing, this guy's going to get it so hardcore. His death was pretty lame, pretty disappointing.
Kind of.
The first guy, Corey Feldman's friend, who gets his heart taken out by Angie Everhart's tongue.
Yeah.
Like, that was probably the most impressive death in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'll give you that.
It's like they blew their load too early.
I'll give you that. Yeah. I don't know why they chose to end the movie the way that they did. Like, not just with the twist. I'm talking about, Dennis Miller handcuffed to the laser mechanism while Erica Laniak is the bait on the stage?
Yeah.
Why was she even on the stage? Was she the bait? Wouldn't it have been smarter if he was like down on the stage? Because
she's
they played out this whole scenario of like, he has blood that I haven't had since I don't remember when. Like how valuable his blood was.
And never capitalized on it.
Yeah, they never touched on that again.
Yeah.
But it made you think like, wouldn't that make sense that he's the bait instead and she run the laser?
Yeah.
But then you could argue, well, she was a vampire by then. She wouldn't have done the laser because that would have killed. But then she ended up killing Angie Everhart at the end anyway by impaling her with the heart pieces equally distributed.
So convenient, too.
Yes.
Yeah. She rubs a trident through her back.
Where did the trident come from? Was that a broken piece of the guitar?
Oh, yeah. That's what it was.
Okay.
And then where did the fourth piece go?
It went into his hand.
Yeah, that's right, because he watches it kind of shrivel up.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
So I have the same feeling as you. Like we're just sitting there shaking our heads.
You know what? I'm going to tie this into last week's. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, we did the Golden Child. And if you haven't heard it yet, first of all, what's wrong with you? You should be listening to every episode in order, maybe with the exception of Birdemic.
Yeah, you could skip that one.
No, I like Birdemic. Not the movie, of course. Although I am waiting for Birdemic 2.
Oh, it's out. We could download it and watch it.
Shit.
So, no, what were you going to say?
I don't even
tying
remember
it back to last week.
Back to Golden Child. I had posited that the only reason that movie is semi-successful is because of Eddie Murphy. There's a silly movie. The plot's pretty thin, paper thin. You got some special effects scenes, or, you know, some special effects aren't all that special. A couple of action scenes that are pretty ho-hum. But Eddie Murphy adds some comedy, adds some levity.
You know what? Not just Eddie Murphy, but you do have the guy who played the villain that you've seen in other stuff.
Yeah.
He's serviceable. He plays a certain role, and he does it fairly well.
Exactly.
He did a good job playing the villain in this movie.
Yeah.
You had like a couple of the other actors, the guy who played what's-her-name's father. You know,
the old Asian guy,
even though his dialogue was obnoxious and he was kind of gross,
he had some personality.
He did what he does.
Yeah.
And he does fairly well. There were at least some points in the movie that you're like, okay, you know, he's doing the best he can with what he has.
Yeah. But without Eddie Murphy, I think we're agreed that movie is not remembered.
I don't think that movie even gets greenlit without Eddie Murphy attached to it.
No, of course not. So this movie, Bordello of Blood, this is what happens. This is what happens when you have that kind of script, that kind of production value, but your star can't support, can't make up the difference for all the other elements.
Dennis Miller probably would have been better served as the police officer. Just the police officer or playing, you know, the televangelist.
I was kind of hoping he'd get turned into a vampire at some point and we'd see it. I remember the first time seeing him being like, oh, I see what's going to happen.
Well, he probably does at the end.
Oh, yeah, because...
Because they get the ashes of Lilith or something.
That's right.
And then, you know, he and Erica Laniak are walking out, you know, in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
They're walking back out. They walk out to the car.
No sunscreen.
And, there is sunscreen.
Oh, that's right.
There
that's
is.
Why she smells
he,
like...
Because he leans over and she's being all flirty with him and stuff out of nowhere. And, you know, they start kissing. He's like... honey, your perfume. And she's like, it's not perfume. And he's running his hand up her leg.
Yep.
And she's like, it's sunblock. And then he looks at her leg and sees the teeth marks.
Two bite marks.
And then she grows her teeth and goes after him.
And then pull away wide shot from outside the car. Ah,
and
screams to his death.
And then we cut back to the Crypt Keeper.
Yep.
And William Sadler's head in a chair.
He should have quit while he was
ahead. Oh, my God.
I love that old campy stuff.
So
I miss him. I miss the Crypt Keeper.
Do you?
Yeah, a little bit.
I don't.
No?
I do. I miss the better points of the Tales from the Crypt show.
Yeah.
There were some great episodes. One that still sticks with me is a guy who like took some drug that made him appear dead. And it was supposed to just be so he could like an insurance fraud kind of thing. And then like the only other person that knew that it was an insurance fraud and he was really alive, I think ended up having a heart attack and they died. So everyone thought he was dead and he wasn't given the antidote.
I saw this one. And so the whole episode
through
is
through his point
of view. And he's doing he's reading his he's saying his thoughts.
Yes.
Nobody else can hear him.
Yes.
The viewer.
Uh-huh.
And it goes the whole episode and you think he's going to get out.
No.
And then at the end.
And he ends up getting cremated.
Is it cremated or they start to...
I thought he got cremated at the end. They put him in a coffin and then just like...
I just remember the last line being... because the serum he had taken, it was supposed to make him feel dead. You know, he couldn't move. He couldn't feel anything.
Yes.
And he said, you know, the serum worked. The one thing that they got wrong was I can still feel.
Uh-huh.
And then you see him... I thought he got cut up. God, maybe he got cremated.
I thought he got cremated.
I just remember... being psychologically...
Dude, that one is creepy,
kind of
but well done.
It was really well done. Because it starts off like they're playing a prank on him or he's playing a prank on somebody.
I thought it was some kind of insurance fraud thing.
That's, I like how this whole episode, we've been talking about better horror
we've been talking
movies
about,
or shows.
We talked 20 minutes about Robert Rodriguez because this movie was so bad.
Much in the same way that this movie couldn't support its own 87 minutes, we couldn't support an hour-long podcast talking about it.
Well, the one thing that got me, again, I'm going to come back to it. We talked about it at the beginning of the podcast.
Okay.
This movie was incredibly forgettable.
Yeah.
It's not the worst movie I've ever seen.
No.
But it is the most unremarkable.
Yeah.
If it's not the most, it's one of the most unremarkable movies and one of the ones that makes me shake my head and go, why?
Yeah.
Like, what was the point other than just the fact that, like, you needed to put out a Tales from the Crypt movie?
Yeah.
There couldn't have been, like, watching this movie, people could not, there's no way the cast or crew watching this at the premiere were like, this is good. This is solid. We got a solid film here.
Well, and even back to the premise, I mean, one of the things that made Tales from the Crypt and shows of that ilk fun was... All right, what's the high-level concept?
Uh-huh.
In the one that you just mentioned, it's, a guy who works in a mortuary pretends to be or is given something that makes him appear like he's dead.
Uh-huh.
And then in the end, there's a twist.
But he's not, yeah.
And this what's the premise of this movie? There's a bordello with
and
vampires in it.
Bordello of blood.
And they discover it and then they kill everybody.
It's not creepy.
Where's the...
There's no story. There's
why do you even tell this story?
And like with Demon Knight, you have a distinct beginning, mm-hmm. middle, and end to that story. And while you're going on that journey, you also get the history of why this has happened.
Yeah, it's well done.
Which is really, you know, it's good for a Tales from the Crypt property. It's very well done. And, you know, the fact that you get the history of what the key is mm-hmm. and how William Sadler came to get it. And now, you know, about how whoever has it is hunted and needs to protect that the blood of Christ or whatever.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Really yeah. cool concept. So it's a real letdown to go from Demon Knight to Bordello of Blood where there's absolutely nothing going on. There's no discernible story going on. It still, to me, doesn't make sense. I know you said, like, the vampires were there to try to kill the evil or kill the sinners.
Yeah.
But really? Like
that's a long way around.
It really
can't you
is.
Get rid of other sinners without this?
Without vampires?
Yeah, exactly. That aren't actually dead? That
exactly.
You just end up creating more
exactly.
undead sinners?
Yeah. So now I ask you
let's do it.
Our usual questions. What did the movie get right?
What is your favorite word? One of these days you're going to ask me that, and I'm not going to be prepared. But I'm kind of unprepared for this question, too, because yeah. I don't know. Boobs.
I mean,
really, at the end of the day, I think the people who were financing this movie were like, if we see vampires, we see blood, we see some decapitation, we see boobs,
uh-huh.
it'll be worth our $15 million. By the way, this movie, that's what it cost, $15 million to make. Dennis Miller, and this is probably why somebody of Eddie Murphy's talents isn't in this movie because of the budget.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that he could have saved it, but at least maybe we'd be talking about it. But Dennis Miller got, what, $250?
You think?
Like, what do you pay for him?
I don't know, man.
So $15 million, and then how much do you think it made at the box office?
I have no idea. Dude, I would probably say that it probably made about $8-9 million.
Yeah, and you're shooting high because it only made $5 million.
Oh, my God.
Just over $5 million, so they lost a third or two-thirds of their income.
God.
Yeah?
I'm surprised by that. Honestly, I'm kind of surprised because I feel like I worked in a movie theater when Demon Knight came out.
Mm-hmm.
Demon Knight did well.
Yeah.
At least it seemed to do well at our theater. It made some decent cash. If you could look that up.
And well, another little fact here is the fact that they pushed up the date. It was released in the summer. It was a summer movie. I think I said August. Or maybe it was June. But it was supposed to be like a Halloween release. This was supposed to be one of these movies
Which
that comes out
made
in October.
More sense.
Hey, of course. This is when you release these movies. Look what's out in the theaters now. You got Carrie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Carrie's
you
coming
got
out this
Carrie.
Week.
Carrie.
Yeah.
No, there's something else. The Purge.
The Insidious 2.
Insidious 2. There you go. Uh-huh. So this is when you release these types of movies. Not in the summer.
No.
People want superheroes.
Look up the numbers for Demon Knight.
Because right.
I'm very Let's curious how that one did in the box office. Because I'm almost positive that one did a lot better.
So boobs and blood. Those are the things I
boobs,
think this
yes.
movie did right.
Boobs and blood. I think the only thing that was done right in this film was the Chris Sarandon part in the mortuary where he's doing the thing with the fat naked chick on the sled.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That
yeah,
was funny.
I'll give you that.
That's the
Because I remember that.
It's the only thing. Well, you remember it, and it's the only thing that elicited any kind of response.
Oh, my God.
Other than, wow, tits. You know, because eventually those will only go so far.
Yeah.
The... What do you, while you're looking that up, yeah. what do you feel that the movie did absolute the worst with? Like, what did it do horribly wrong, unforgivably?
You know, there's a lot of different points. I'm going to focus on one. So we've already said Dennis Miller is unlikable.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's kind of smarmy. Maybe you like him as a person, but in this movie, he's just, his comedy doesn't come through because it's not genuine, and he's not that good of an actor.
Yeah.
So I'm going to focus my ire on, what's her name, the little blonde who you said doesn't
Erica Laniak?
So she made her career on showing her boobs.
Uh-huh.
So doesn't show her boobs. Wears a pantsuit throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
Is unsympathetic because she doesn't really care. Doesn't take any initiative except to make a documentary while her, you know, brother is lost somewhere in a whorehouse.
Yeah.
And then when she finds him, that he's been turned into a vampire. She like go back and watch those scenes. Even as they're running away, she's more concerned about like her hair and her shoes and how are we gonna get out of here.
Yeah.
Than the fact that her brother, she's just watched him die.
Yes.
And it's like
her blood, her kin, yeah, all like, she has left. And they never explore like what happened to the rest of their family?
No, I know.
Where are their parents?
Yeah, yeah. Why is it just the two? He says at the beginning, you're not my mom. Like, yeah, what the fuck is your mom? You're like two 18-year-olds right. living in this mansion.
Yeah, except you look 30. They look 30. Yeah. They're supposed to be 18.
Well, Corey Feldman did some hard living before the filming of this movie, so he could have played 40, actually.
No, that's true. I think the worst thing that this movie did was, I think it falls with the director. I don't even know who directed it, but they didn't direct this film.
Let's find out.
If they had any hand in the casting, shame on them for that. because they cast horrible performers for it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's up to the director to get performances out of people, to pull those performances out of them. Now, unless you're doing that health insurance commercial thing that we were doing. then it was just like, can you please just remember your lines? Just remember your dialogue.
Oh, my God. She was a model first and an actress second.
Bam! And she did a way better job than Erica Laniak or Angie Everhart did in this film.
But she hashtag loves her job.
She does.
Real quick, the director you're chiding is Gilbert Adler.
Okay.
And the best thing he's known for is, what do you know, Tales from the Crypt TV series. Some episodes of Charmed. A lot of TV here.
Uh-huh.
But it looks like his only feature was...
It was Bordello of Blood.
Oh, no, he did some Freddy's Nightmare TV series. There's another one.
That's right.
I forgot about Freddy's Nightmare
TV show.
See, there was a whole spat of these Tales from the Crypt ripoffs.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess ultimately they're all Twilight Zone ripoffs, aren't
they? But I think that you're right in as much as, you know, Tales from the Crypt introduced the whole, like, horror element, and it's that scary character who also introduced the vignettes.
Yeah.
But getting back to the directing, you know, you've got to have a skilled director who's going to be able to pull performances out. Now, and the key to a decent director also is someone who can recognize not only the strengths of their performers, but the weaknesses, and know how to turn those weaknesses into something that he can use on camera.
Well said.
And there's none of that going on here. Yeah. All right. So if we were to make this movie now.
Yeah. Hold on. Before we get to this, because this is my favorite part.
Go ahead.
You would ask the budget for Demon Knight and what it
means.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was made for $12 million, and then it raked in almost twice as much, just over $21
million. Bam.
So maybe not twice as much. Success.
It's a financial success. It was a cult classic.
Yeah.
Again, critics, they railed up against it. But
you can't go with the critics on something like this.
No,
critics never like this type of movie.
It's a campy horror film. It was made in the spirit of something like Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, I think it succeeds. It's a fun movie. Billy Zane is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
You could tell he's just having the time of his life.
Everybody.
So if you were to make Bordello of Blood again today,
shit.
Who do you cast?
I'm unprepared for this. So, gosh, Dennis Miller. Who do you find? Well, do you stick with that?
I would throw Seth Rogen in.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Now, this is a great idea because we're hot on the tails of This Is the End.
Uh-huh.
Which is kind of a spiritual successor to this type of movie. It's a comedy first,
yeah.
But it's got its roots in
You get
in
any
horror.
One of those guys. Any
wow.
one of those guys.
Yeah.
But I feel like Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen has that smarmy edge to him.
Yeah.
You know, he's sarcastic, but he's likable too.
Or even like a David Spade. Like
I can't agree with you on that.
No, really? Because I love David Spade, and he's always playing that same character. He's always no to David Spade. Am I the only person?
I feel like
sticking
David
up
Spade
David
and Dennis
Spade?
Miller come from the same school, though.
They do, but one is like funny and of the people, and the other one thinks he's above it.
Which
all.
Which one?
David Spade. One likes to bang hot 21-year-olds, apparently.
Oh my gosh. I don't know about David Spade.
No?
I mean, I guess, hey, it's your fantasy casting.
That's
you
true.
Cast
That's
whoever
true.
You want.
But I'm thinking of like Tommy Boy David Spade or
See, I feel like
PC
Tommy Boy David
Spade
is the same as Bordello of Blood Dennis Miller.
No, oh, that's unfair.
You know, he doesn't bring like a different area.
You know what it is? When David Spade is in trouble, he can play the victim well.
Yeah.
Like the kind of wild out.
You're right.
And show you that he's actually in some danger.
Some peril.
Dennis Miller never seemed
no
like.
There's no stakes. With Dennis Miller, Dennis Miller's on a movie set the entire time.
Pretty much. Ordering people around.
Seth Rogen or David Spade.
All right.
So who do we cast as our femme fatale?
The Angie Everhart?
The Erica Laniak and the Angie Everhart.
Oh, okay. Oh, you got to get the sweet innocence.
We got to get the sweet innocence.
Well, I love, and I think she's done movies like this before, but I love Anna Faris. Are you familiar with her?
Anna Faris would be good.
She's hot. I like her.
Uh-huh.
She's funny, but she's got some really good acting chops.
Yeah.
And she's not like funny, like over the top, silly comedy funny. Like uh-huh. she can be subtle when she has to.
Yeah.
And I think that the tone that this movie was trying to go for, kind of that campy, but you know, kind of laughing at itself, she'd be able to. Well, oh shit, she did the Scary Movie movies.
Yeah, absolutely. And she was adorable in those.
Yeah.
See, along those same lines, I think for my Erica Laniak style character, I would have gone with Isla Fisher.
Ooh, there you go. Yeah.
Because the thing is, she's got that same kind of cute energy to her that Anna Faris has. She's also really funny.
She's funny. A little more vapid for my taste.
Really?
I just saw Now You See Me. Is it called Now You,
Now
See,
You
Me?
See Me?
Yeah. Have you seen that yet?
I did.
Just came on a Blu-ray. What were your thoughts on that? Let's talk about other movies some more.
We don't have a whole lot of time for that.
Jeff's
his eyes.
He's falling asleep at the console. We're almost done here,
Jeff. It's a good thing we're not doing two tonight. So, no, I get you on that. I think that she can be sexy, but I think she's funny and cute, too.
She's sexy. She's
like,
funny
I
and cute.
I keep going back to Wedding Crashers. There's character in Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, all right.
And she's, you know, she's really funny, and I think she could hold her own. An actress like that, she could hold her own against someone like David Spade or Seth Rogen.
I like Seth Rogen better.
But also, I think Anna Faris could do that same thing. So who plays your villain?
The Angie Everhart version? Uh-huh. Okay. Well, they skewed a little older here. Well, I mean, not really. If she doesn't have to show tits, if she doesn't have to be titular or sexy,
which Angie Everhart didn't do.
No, not really. I like, I'm blanking on her word, Ripley from fucking Alien. Help me out. Sigourney Weaver.
Really?
Yeah.
You want Sigourney Weaver to be the sexy vampire? Like the,
I want,
not the madam of the bordello?
But yes, the madam of the bordello. This is who you get some, it's always the older person who's like, you know, out of the business, but you knew she used to be in the business.
But like,
She seems motherly, and yet she could be terrifying as hell, as
we
learned from
Ghostbusters. Interesting choice.
Thank you.
You want to put Sigourney Weaver in a movie with David Spade?
Well, let's go Seth Rogen then for that. I'd have to go somewhere else.
I don't know, man. That's your casting. That's your film.
I'm going to stand by Sigourney Weaver, but let's put it with Seth Rogen and who's your choice?
Wow, that's pretty good.
Isla Fisher.
Yeah. See, I think for the villainess, I was thinking something like Shannon Elizabeth in her prime.
Oh my God. Oh yeah, but she would be one of the whores.
Shannon Elizabeth?
Yeah. Like, she's young enough to still be working.
She could be one of the whores, but I was just thinking that I thought that maybe she could play that you know, the character, the madam character.
All right, yeah.
She could be the Lilith in my version.
I would love to see her tits again, so.
Well, I don't know how they look now, but I'm thinking back like American Pie.
Probably better than Sigourney Weaver's.
Yeah.
We agree on that.
I think you're right about that one.
Okay.
All right, so if you've got any thoughts about Bordello of Blood, you can always comment on our Facebook page, just like Michael Daly did.
Yeah, thanks, bud.
You know, join us on Facebook. At facebook.com/theeditingbay. I believe that's the address for it. If not, just search The Editing Bay. You'll see our page. It's the picture Joel made with the girl with her eyes bleeding.
Not The Edit Bay, that other imposter podcast.
Right.
I got my eyes on you.
Is there another podcast?
Called The Edit Bay, yeah.
Really?
But they actually do like industry, like serious talk. Yeah.
We are so not legit.
Exactly.
Yeah, but find us on there. You can follow us, find out what we're talking about. Look at
Jeff
he
is,
just wants us
Jeff
to be
looks
done.
Like Angie Everhart from Bordello of Blood.
He looks like Angie Everhart when they dig her up in the coffin before they put the heart back.
He actually looks like the Crypt Keeper a little bit.
So other than that, you have anything else you want to add? Any last minute thoughts about that?
No.
Oh,
just,
and your suggestions. Make sure you get have a few suggestions.
Do you have
already.
Any ideas for movies next week? This was kind of our Halloween episode somewhat, but
well,
we still
I feel
have a
like
couple
we could
more
still do, we could still do more like scary movies.
I
and
agree.
Stuff. So if you've got any ideas... shoot us your ideas. Let's pick something from one of the listeners.
Sure.
Yeah.
We face. Say that and we're going to see the selection.
We're going to watch fucking Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man or something.
Ooh.
We're going to do that. Oh, we'll eventually do that. But no, seriously, send your suggestions.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening. And we'll catch you next week.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.